This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, a community of more than 40,000 fermentation enthusiasts from around the world. Visit homebrewersassociation.org for recipes, brewing tips, and conversation. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 5th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Gary Glass, director of the American Homebrewers Association, previews HomebrewCon in June and brings us up to date on other matters of importance within the AHA. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who is helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. I want to start off on a serious note this episode by extending our moral support to our friends in Nashville and other areas of Tennessee following this week's tornadoes. The loss of life and physical damage is terrifying. And I also want to say that this week's interview with Gary about HomebrewCon in Nashville was recorded before the tornado hit, so we didn't have a chance to talk about it. And I'm hoping that our brewing friends are okay. And I'm hoping that Nashville can recover quickly. And I'm looking forward to visiting Nashville in June when we can share some better times together. Today's interview was also recorded before the horrifying shooting at the Molson Coors facility in Milwaukee. And it's always shocking to hear these shootings, even though they're apparently becoming more common, and especially when it's connected with an industry that you're familiar with. Companies and brands can compete, but beer people are good people, and we're thinking of those who are going through this tragedy as well. And I'm not a spokesman for them, but the Brewers Association tweeted a link to a GoFundMe page this week that benefits the survivors of that incident if you want to check out the Brewers Association feed and help out in that way. So a double dose of really bad news to talk about this week. And frankly, I debated on whether to delay or re-record this interview with Gary because of the connection with Nashville. But I think one of the ways that we can help is to bring financial support to the city by gathering a few thousand homebrewers and spending our money there. So I'm looking forward to doing that in June and looking forward to happier times. Well, there's no non-clumsy transition from tragedy to, you know, me talking about homebrew, is there? But on the positive side of things, I'm planning to post an early release video on Friday for financial supporters on my, what is it? Oh, it's my malt sampler thing. And I got ingredients for the next round of hop samplers as well. And I'm trying to stay away from my black lager and K-Row syrup mild that I've got on tap until Steve and I can record videos about them. And we've got signs of spring around here, so I'm trying to think of the next spring-like beer to brew to sip on the porch. And when I do brew that springy beer, I'm sure I'll brew it with yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Now that's a segue. You know we love Imperial Yeast. They're the only organic yeast producer with the highest cell count of any liquid yeast. Say it with me, 200 billion cells. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters anymore for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches, and the shelf life for an easy open packet is now 4 months, although I have used older packets that work just fine. Just saying. You get top-notch customer service and technical support, and Imperial's fun seasonal releases are a great way to get inspired to brew up something new. I don't know what the next seasonal is, but Casey at Imperial says something exciting is coming in April. So, I don't know what. So I can't, there's no risk of spoilers for me, because I don't know. Check out all the strains available at imperialyeast.com and pick up a packet for your next brew at your local homebrew store. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Listener Jason writes, I'm looking to drink a bit less beer in 2020, me too, and was wondering if you've tried or tried making sparkling hop water, or if you might have any ideas or suggestions on making it. There isn't a lot of information on it out there, but what there is says to boil water for 10 minutes, then cool down to 170 degrees, add lemon juice to lower the pH to around 4.6, add 2 grams of hops per gallon. It doesn't sound like a lot. Strain, cool to serving temperature, then carbonate. Jason says, my first batch turned out awful. Well, Jason, I don't know about sparkling hop water, but coincidentally, this morning, someone asked something about the hopped kombucha that Steve and I made on Basic Brewing Radio Basic Brewing Video back in 2017. That stuff was delicious. It's tart, fizzy, and very hoppy. So watching that episode from July of 2017 made me want to make some more. So do a search on your Basic Brewing app or on YouTube for hoppy kombucha and Basic Brewing and see if that satisfies your beer thirst. And while you're on YouTube, you can look for the latest video from our friends and sponsors at High Gravity in Tulsa. If you head over to youtube.com/highgravitybrew, you can see a new video that Desiree and Dave produced updating updating us on the upgrades to the Warthog Brew-in-a-Bag system. There's a new controller since the last video, the Warthog EBC-130, a reconfigured temperature probe, new stainless steel connectors, a new spray head, an upgraded pump, and other cool new features. The system was already awesome, and now it's even better. Plus, you can now upgrade at an added cost to a Spike brew kettle for the 240-volt brew-in-a-bag system on highgravitybrew.com. If you're not into brew-in-a-bag, High Gravity also has a wide range of electric systems that they make and others make, too. From 5 gallons to 2 barrels in single, double, and triple vessel configurations, I have a Warthog system from High Gravity, and you know I love it. It takes the pain out of propane. And if you use the code EBC75BB on highgravitybrew.com, you can save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. Family-owned and operated, highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's go back a couple of weeks and talk to Gary Glass about HomebrewCon and other matters of AHA importance. Gary Glass, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, great to be with you, James.
Every year about this time, we catch up and we look ahead. We've got HomebrewCon coming up in Nashville, Tennessee, coming up, and registration is here coming soon.
That's right. Yeah, this is our 42nd annual HomebrewCon. Registration launches March 10th. And dates for the conference are June 18th through the 20th, as you said, in Nashville at the Gaylord Opryland.
And Steve and I already have our room reserved, and we were talking before the mic went on that this year you decided to allow hotel reservations to happen before registering for the conference. In the past, registering for the hotel was kind of a part of the registration process, right?
Right, yeah, and we just realized that so many of our members like to arrange for their travel in advance before we're ready to launch registration, so it just made sense for us to open that up, and, you know, we certainly hope that people are sincere when they're reserving their rooms, because we need to make sure that all those rooms go to people who are actually attending the conference.
Yeah, and expecting a big crowd this year?
We are expecting a big crowd. Our early reservations are showing that Nashville is going to be quite popular. I'm super excited about this. This is actually the first time since 2006 that HomebrewCon is going to be in a southern state. And now obviously Nashville Music City is a big draw in and of itself. But I'm really excited about the property we're going to be at, the Gaylord Opryland. It's a really cool convention and hotel space. For anybody who hasn't been there, it's all indoors, but there's a river in it, and there is a forest in it, and gardens everywhere. It's a really amazing property, and one of the things that really makes me excited about this particular venue is that we have enough hotel rooms for everybody attending the conference to be there. So, you know, as you know, the last several years we've been in convention centers where we've had multiple hotels in the area around, but to have one hotel that can basically house the entire conference is pretty awesome. We haven't done that since the days of when the conference was a few hundred people instead of a few thousand.
Are there any truth to the rumors that the river will be 100% beer on club night?
Well, I would imagine it'll be some portion of beer, but hopefully not 100%. That beer would oxidize quickly and probably not smell too pleasant by the morning.
Just a weak attempt at a joke.
I think you're funny.
Well, luckily for us, you think we're funny. But this is the closest Homebrew Con to Northwest Arkansas, where we live. So it's like an 8-hour drive, and so it's also a fairly short drive within a lot of populated areas around there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a fairly easy drive for a lot of our members throughout the South, but also throughout the Midwest. So, it's a really great central location for us. So I'm very excited about our location in general. I've been to, we actually had the Brewers Association had the Craft Brewers Conference in Nashville a couple of years back, and I really loved that event. So I'm excited that we were able to bring Homebrew Con to Nashville. And I should probably give a quick shout out to Art Whitaker. He's a homebrewer from Tennessee, very much involved with the Milk the Funk group there. But he was instrumental in getting legislation passed in Tennessee that allowed us to have this conference. So big props to Art.
Wow, cheers to Art. And who are the homebrew clubs that are going to be responsible for helping to put on the show this year?
Well, I guess the biggest one right in Nashville is the Music City Brewers. There's, I believe, the Mid-State Homebrewers as well, and there are several other clubs. Well, we've got clubs from all over, not just the region, but you know, throughout the country that have already signed up. In fact, the pace for clubs signing up for Club Night is much faster than what we saw last year. So, very excited to see that level of interest, and should make for a really fantastic club night.
And I challenge Arkansas homebrew clubs, especially those in Northwest Arkansas, to make the trip this year and put a booth up. I don't think I can't remember if I've ever seen an Arkansas club with a booth at a homebrew con. So I've definitely seen Arkansas homebrewers there, but I'm not sure that I've ever seen a booth at Club Night from Arkansas. So a big challenge to the natural state brewers.
This is the year to represent.
For sure. So now that we've mentioned Club Night, if people have been hiding under a rock or new to the hobby, talk about the events that go on at Homebrew Con and why people should go there.
Sure. So, I guess since we were talking about Homebrew Con or Club Night, we can start with that. But I mean, Club Night is the one thing that I most look forward to every year. It is by far the best beer festival that anybody could ever attend. All the beer is homebrew, and it's all served by homebrew clubs from all over the country. And you know, we've had clubs from all over the world, in fact, that show up and serve beer. But it goes way beyond what you would expect from a beer festival. So, you know, the clubs go all out in terms of decorating their booths and having club costumes that are themed around, you know, their club or the area they're from. And it just elevates the level of fun to something way beyond what you can normally experience. And you know, when you're sampling the beers, the the person serving you is very likely the person who made that beer. And so you can talk to them about it and learn how they did it. And so it's just such a great time. But yeah, so what I look forward to more than anything all year long.
I can't remember how many kegs of beer were in that room last year. Do you remember?
I know we end up with, I think we typically end up with more than 1,000 beers being served over the course of HomebrewCon.
and that's at the hospitality, it's not the hospitality suite anymore. What do they call it, or what do y'all call it?
The social club is what we call it. So that's good segue into another aspect of the conference. We have our Homebrew Expo. Where we have somewhere in the neighborhood of like 70 to 80 vendors that are, these are people, they're suppliers of ingredients and equipment and services and all kinds of things that that serve the homebrewing market. So you're able to see the latest and greatest in equipment, lots of shiny stainless steel stuff to make you drool. But also, you know, in that space, we want to make sure we have homebrew available, and so we have a kind of a rotating list of homebrew clubs that serve out of the social club and Homebrew Expo. So while you're perusing the wares, you're welcome to sip on some fine homebrew.
Yeah, it's kind of, we've taken advantage of it the past couple of years, and we bring the microphone to the social area there, because just like club night, you know, the people that are pouring the beers most often are the people that brewed the beers, and it's great to taste some beers that you may never have heard of before, these styles, and you know, if you like them, you can talk to the brewer and get tips and, you know, get inspiration. That goes on all day. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be responsible. You stress that people should be responsible. This is not a free for all. This is not a drunken frat party kind of a thing. And that's another thing that I like about the conference is, you know, if you go to your average beer festival, you're going to see some collateral damage and a lot of it. And there is significantly less of that at this HomebrewCon, because you have people that know what they're doing and respect, you know, the beverage.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things, we do limit the pour size at the conference every year. But we find that, you know, this being a crowd of homebrewers, they want to be able to enjoy the entire conference. And so it's not like a beer festival where somebody might be just trying to drink as many beers as possible. It's really more about learning about the beers and getting to try new things. So we do find that the attendees of this conference do a great job of pacing themselves throughout. So, you know, a lot of the people who are attending are there with club members. So you have people looking out for you. And I think, generally it's very, very good at self-control. So We don't have a lot of the issues that we see at a typical beer festival or other types of conferences. In fact, we usually get feedback from the venues, because obviously it's a beer related event, so there's some concerns about alcohol consumption. But we almost always hear back, like, first off, they ask us when we're coming back, and then they let us know just how great our attendees were and how impressed they were with, you know, how friendly everybody is and how, you know, they control themselves, unlike some other conventions they might have.
And we won't name any names.
I'm so tempted, but yeah, there are some recurring themes that we hear about.
Oh, we'll have to talk after.
But yes, I don't want to offend anybody from those professions.
And there are lots of hydration stations around, and one of the major reasons to go to HomebrewCon is not only just enjoying the beer, but there's a ton of informational sessions going on, presentations and panels and all kinds of education, again, where you're learning things, and you're getting inspiration, and you're hearing from authors that you've read their books, and you get to talk to them on the sidelines and all this stuff. So it's amazing the amount of information that's there everywhere.
Right. We have somewhere on the order of 70 different educational sessions at the conference this year. Huge amounts of opportunities. And then we record all those sessions so that we can make them available. Obviously, we usually have six concurrent sessions going on at any given time. And so we recognize that not everybody can attend every single one. Obviously, that's impossible. So we record them so that not only the attendees can go back and see anything that they missed, but we make them available for all AHA members as a means of helping our members who maybe can't get to HomebrewCon at least get in on the educational opportunities.
And they can find out all the information and register, and you have to be a member of the AHA, right, as well?
That's correct, but if you're not a member, you can sign up for a year of digital only membership for $38 as a part of the registration package. So you can go ahead and just go straight in and register. And that's actually the membership requirement is, well, for one, we believe everybody who wants to attend should be a member, but for two, it's kind of legal coverage for us because that's what makes it differentiates this event from, say, a public beer festival. We're serving homebrew, which is unlicensed, untaxed alcohol. It works in our favor if it's a private event limited to our members.
It's essentially a closed club event.
Right.
There you go. Well, in speaking of the American Homebrewers Association, the elections for the AHA Governing Committee are coming up.
That's right. It's actually ongoing as we speak. We have our board for the American Homebrewers Association. We call it our governing committee. We have 15 people who serve on that governing committee of volunteers that advise the staff of the American Homebrewers Association, play a critical role for the AHA. But right now we have our annual election going on, and we currently have five seats available with 18 candidates running for a seat on the governing committee. So really important, and all of those folks who are running or volunteering their time, great list of people from all around the country. So I would encourage any and every member of the American Homebrewers Association to go onto the homebrewersassociation.org website, check out the candidate statements and vote.
And these are homebrewers just like us.
That's right. Yeah.
And there may be some familiar faces in there. I looked at the list and I know some of them, so I'm not going to say who. I'm not going to vouch for anybody or stand up for anybody, but it's important. And are these people your boss or are they just an advisory committee?
I would say it's more than an advisory committee. I like to tell them they're kind of like the legislative branch of the AHA. So they're where the ideas come from, that, you know, that we as staff take those ideas that the governing committee comes out with, and we roll that into our annual plan every year. But also a lot of the work that we do at the AHA gets done, you know, particularly on the subcommittee level of the governing committee. So in addition to the governing committee, a lot of those members of the governing committee, as well as other AHA members, serve on subcommittees addressing things like our competition subcommittee works on the National Homebrew Competition every year. We have a government affairs subcommittee that kind of advises us on legislative matters. We have a diversity and inclusion subcommittee that is working with that I work with and other AHA staff work with on trying to make the American Homebrewers Association more diverse and more inclusive.
It sounds like a good way to get in touch or be in touch with your memberships. You also have voting out there for Homebrew Shop of the Year.
That's right. So every year this is our third year of doing this particular award. The Homebrew Shop of the Year award highlights the critical role that our local homebrew shops take in our local communities, and it's a way of looking at some of those shops that really do a great job of serving their local communities. So we ask that our members, you know, who have a shop that they particularly like, they can write up a short report on why they think that the shop is deserving of the award, and there's some criteria just kind of like fill in or check off list. It makes it pretty easy to get through that process, but it's a great way for us to highlight what those best shops that are out there, and for other shops to kind of get ideas on how some of these shops that are doing particularly well are doing what they do.
And we've heard in the news in the past year about a couple of high visibility homebrew shops that have not done so well. So it's important to support your local homebrew shop.
Yeah, exactly. It's more critical than ever. In fact, I think over this past year, we've seen something like 60 homebrew shops across the country close down.
Wow.
It's a tough business out there. You know, it's very niche market, and you know they're now competing with online sales more than ever, as well as just a kind of a shift in some of the homebrewing practices. I think, you know, 10 years or so ago, people were probably brewing more frequently than the average homebrewer is now, and you know, probably brewing on average higher volumes. So, you know, even if we don't necessarily have fewer homebrewers out there, I think that the homebrewers we've got are probably not brewing as quite as frequently or as in high as volume, and that really impacts those retailers. I think it's really part of this success of homebrewing, and which has led to the success of craft brewing. We're approaching 8,000 breweries in this country, and most of those were opened by very passionate homebrewers. Unfortunately for a shop, every time a new brewery opens in their neighborhood, it's probably their best customer that they just lost.
That's happened a couple of times with Steve with his homebrew shop here in Northwest Arkansas. He says everybody mm-hmm. who brews a batch of beer says they want to open their own brewery. So. and speaking of, I'm being Mr. Segway here. And speaking of enthusiastic homebrewers, you also have nominations for the Radagast Club of the Year?
Right. So Radagast, so just for those who aren't familiar with this particular name, it's a Slavic deity of brewing. Like, so according to whatever Slav religion this came from, was the creator of beer. So that's where the name comes from. We use various beer-related gods for names. But the idea of this award actually started as the Awesome Club of Awesomeness Award, which was, you likely know Drew Beecham, who was on our governing committee for many years. He was the originator of this. But what this is you know, because we already have a couple of competition-related awards for clubs, he really wanted to create something that recognized clubs for things they do beyond just entering competitions. And so this is really about all the things that homebrew clubs do for the homebrewing community in general, and you know their local community in particular, and what they do for promoting the hobby and for helping their members to brew better beer. So that's what this award is all about, and so we're currently taking nominations for that and taking those through the end of March. So if you think you've got an awesome club, check out homebrewersassociation.org and let us know about it for the Radagast Club of the Year award.
And there's a long list of criteria on the website that will kind of give you a clue of as to what y'all are looking for.
Right. Yeah. So you know, it covers a wide range of things. So you know what, particularly like how promoting the hobby, as well as you know anything that they're doing to bring new people into the hobby, and things that the club might be doing to support their local community beyond the homebrewing community.
And the National Homebrew Competition, the largest beer competition in the known galaxy, is going on right now.
It is. We just wrapped up the initial registration process, and judging begins on March 13th. So we do for the first round of the competition, we have 13 judge centers spread around the United States, and we'll have close to 10,000 homebrewed entries judged across those 13 judge centers, and then all of the first, second, and third place winners in each of the categories advance on to the final round, and so we'll do the final round judging at the Gaylord in Nashville for HomebrewCon.
Wow, and I'm just amazed that this the logistics come together to make this happen every year. It's it's just incredible.
It is incredible, and it really takes a team. So, led by our competition coordinator John Moorhead, but highly dependent on all volunteers. So, all the site directors and judge coordinators and steward coordinators for all of those judge centers are all volunteers, and as are the judges and the stewards. So it's a huge undertaking that requires a lot of work from people beyond just the AHA staff. So very appreciative of all the effort that goes into making that competition a reality. But yeah, when you think about your 13 competitions all happening at the same time with around 750 entries each, and then coordinating getting all the beers to those places and the entrance back their score sheets, and then coordinating getting the winners into the final round. There's a whole lot of logistics that it takes to pull off a 10,000 entry competition.
and if that's not enough to keep John Moorhead occupied, you've also given him the task of keeping up with homebrew legislation across the country. Is that right?
That is correct. And thankfully, since I used to personally oversee all of our legislative activities, but I found as we do more and more, that became harder and harder for me to keep up with it. And thankfully, John was a very quick learner, and so he is. I've handed off the torch to him on taking the lead on legislative activities, and he's able to do a lot more than I was ever able to do. So excited to see what we're able to do on behalf of our members and homebrewers around the country.
And every year we talk about homebrew legislation because it's important. I have some news from Arkansas. I got an email recently from Kent Thompson, who sent me a marked up some ABC regulations here in the state that specified it specified that homebrew will be allowed on premises of breweries and such, for the purposes of organized affairs, exhibitions, competitions, and tastings, but not for sale. So last time you and I talked about homebrew legislation, you were a little concerned that the Arkansas legislation that was passed before that was not specific enough to, cover homebrew adequately. But it sounds like they knew what they were doing all along.
Hopefully, yes. But it's a great example of just how complicated not just homebrew law, but any laws dealing with alcohol tend to be very, very complicated. And so you not only have the law as it's written in the bill, then you have a regulatory agency, alcohol beverage control, or whatever your state's regulatory agency goes by, then has to make rules that their officers can abide by in order to enforce those laws. And so a lot of times that's where things happen, is in that rulemaking process. And so thankfully, in that case with Arkansas, we were able to work that out so that we are able to allow homebrew on licensed premises. And that's a really big issue for us. Probably the majority of the laws we deal with now, that homebrewing is essentially legal in all 50 states, allowing homebrew to be brought onto licensed premises is one of the challenges that we come across quite frequently.
One thing that Kent said was that the way the legislation was written was they were trying to protect homebrew in dry counties. So apparently there was some concern that there would be some, you know, interpretation of the law that would undo the legalization in dry counties. So, you know, state by state, sometimes county by county, these things are tricky.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And that example of those states where there are dry and wet counties, I'm pretty certain that we're, the last two states that they legalized homebrewing, Mississippi and Alabama, both have dry and wet. And I believe that part of that was certainly something we had to compromise on just to get a bill passed, was that we weren't going to try and legalize homebrewing in dry counties.
Mm. Yeah, wow. It's
obviously less than ideal, but, you know, better to have at least some of the state legal than to not have it at all.
Yeah. So what else is going on in the country?
Well, there's several other states that we're looking at. You know, actually Idaho is, we just sent off what we call an action alert last week. In Idaho, homebrewing is legal, but by the way way the bill's written, it requires all the ingredients to be native Idaho ingredients. And now in Idaho, they do actually grow barley for malting, and they grow hops. But as any of us homebrewers know, it's the malt that we buy and the hops that we buy aren't packaged in a way that would let you differentiate between Idaho-grown Cascade and Cascade-grown in Yakima or in Willamette. So just not a very practical law. So they're hoping to get that fixed. So there is a bill pending in Idaho now that will hopefully correct that and just basically allow for homebrewers to do what they're currently doing, because there's no way to really enforce the requirement of using only native ingredients.
Yeah, it's well intentioned, but I don't know how you would do that.
Well, I honestly think it originated with the legalization of wine. So wine was actually, home winemaking was specifically legal at the end of Prohibition, and a lot of states did allow for it, but in those cases were requiring that the grapes be locally grown. That was a common thing back in the 1930s, I guess. So my interpretation of that is it probably was a case where the home winemaking was limited to using native grapes, and so when they passed homebrew legislation, they just added on and beer or something along those lines. It's not uncommon to see that kind of evolution of the law. So probably well, as you said, well intentioned, but not exactly practical. So hopefully we'll get that corrected.
In other states, you sent me a list. Ohio?
Ohio, yeah. Ohio's a kind of a unique case in that they defer. There's no current bill on the books regarding homebrewing, but they defer to federal law. But that leaves a wide range of interpretation to their regulatory agency, and that can be problematic for big events like HomebrewCon, where we're very much dependent on making sure that what we're doing is legal, and we're booking several years out in advance. And if we have a change in the the director of alcohol beverage control in the meantime, and they decide to take a different interpretation, that could be very challenging for us. Mm-hmm. In fact, something very much essentially that like that happened last time we were in Ohio and Cincinnati in 2008. We had a very, very last minute requirement of getting a permit that I'm pretty certain we didn't actually need, but those kinds of things. at least in the case of Ohio, there's not a whole lot of anti-homebrew enforcement, so it hasn't been too pressing of an issue, but we've been working with AHA Governing Committee member Goose Steingass on a bill to qualify for at long last that in Ohio homebrewing is legal, and we can bring homebrew onto licensed premises and hold competitions and all those kinds of things that are kind of currently at the whim of interpretation.
Be fun to go back to Cincinnati again. I've been hankering for some Skyline chili.
They do have some interesting culinary oddities in Cincinnati.
it's good on spaghetti, I tell you.
very, very odd, but yes, it's good.
up next on the Hit Parade, Pennsylvania.
Yes, in Pennsylvania, we've been working with the Brewers of Pennsylvania, the Brewers Guild there. We had a couple of municipalities in Pennsylvania that had decided that they had some health department issues shutting down homebrewers that were working with charities. So in Pennsylvania, at least to our knowledge, up until very recently, it was legal for homebrewers to use homebrew to raise funds from charity. In fact, one of the Pittsburgh clubs puts on an event every year that raises tens of thousands of dollars for charities in Pittsburgh. But in some other municipalities, they were having some issues with health inspectors saying that because their product is being made in their homes, they can't serve it at these events. And so it was causing some problems for that really should be non-issues. So we're working on that with the Brewers Guild there, which is very, very pro homebrewer. So we're hoping to get that worked out, but that's a case of fairly localized issue, and so it's not necessarily affecting all of Pennsylvania homebrewers, but it is affecting some, and we would like to get that corrected.
I bet there are charity bake sales that are going along with cookies and cakes and stuff that people aren't making those in commercial kitchens.
I would offer that the homebrew that's being served at the bake sale is probably a lot safer than your average homemade pastry that may have been sitting around for a few days.
I could tell some stories.
About bake sales?
Well, about people bringing food over to the house, people for family events and things like that. And yeah. Ooh, yeah, I'll save that for later. Okay. I got to
don't throw grandma under the bus.
I got to start thinking about Skyline Chili again. and finally on the list that you gave me, South Dakota.
Yeah, and this is something that's just beginning. We had a group of homebrewers in Nebraska that recently got a bill passed, and so their neighbors in South Dakota took notice, and I believe the issue that they're looking at is what we talked about before about serving homebrew on licensed premises, so being able to bring homebrew to a club meeting at a local brewery, that kind of thing. But that is just getting started. Something that we're observing, and we'll certainly offer our assistance to as things progress.
Well, it seems like whack-a-mole. You know, once you get one situation taken care of and another one pops up somewhere else. So that's job security for
exactly.
John.
Yeah, job security for John. And, you know, I think it's also a good reminder of like why it's so important to have a national organization out there for homebrewers is because, you know, just because you're able to do what you're doing now doesn't mean that there might be some interpretation of the law that's different than what's currently being interpreted. Or in a lot of cases, a lot of times homebrewers are doing things that they don't realize are technically against the law until those things surface. And that's most often what happens is common practice all of a sudden we find out is actually not in line with the way the law is written. And so but we're here to help with those homebrewers in states where those things come up, and we're happy to help work on legislation to get things changed.
Well, every group needs a voice nowadays, and we appreciate y'all and your efforts to be our voice. And I want to personally say thank you for helping to support our voice here at Basic Brewing Radio. You've been a loyal sponsor for many years, and I am always grateful.
Oh well, it's my pleasure. You know, I tend to think that I have the best job in the world because I serve the best people in the world. So it's just an honor to be able to serve the members of the American Homebrewers Association. And, you know, I just the homebrewing community is just so awesome and so generous that it really is an honor to work on behalf of homebrewers.
Awesome. Well, Gary, I will see you in June in Nashville.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, thanks again to Gary. Again, I'm looking forward to happier times in Nashville this summer and hoping for the best for everybody over there as they face the cleanup and the healing from the tornadoes. We will see you in June and we'll share a pint of good homebrew. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.